Springfield's Talk 1041 coming up. I'm just going to play two other quick bits of audio from the testimony yesterday in Arizona regarding election fraud. Also, the Trump campaign is filing a lawsuit to the Wisconsin Supreme Court today with the allegations of abuse around the process of absentee voting in the state, which they say by their count affected 220,000 ballots or roughly thereabout. Don Luzader here with news.
And happy 1st of December, by the way.
Yeah,
can you believe it?
Is.
Christmas is this month.
Oh, it is.
Wow. Springfield Fire Department responding to a house fire early this morning on Crestview west of Golden. Crews say when they got on scene, flames were shooting through the roof. Now, four people were inside that home. Some pets were in there as well. They were able to escape. No one hurt. The department's unsure what caused that fire. They're investigating. Highway Patrol says a teenager from Willard has died in a crash on Farm Road 60 in WW near Ebenezer. Troopers say Aaliyah Smith was behind the wheel of a car that ran off the road, hit a utility pole, and flipped. Monday afternoon, Smith was 17. A passenger in that vehicle had serious injuries. And St. Louis County Executive Sam Page says that county is in crisis mode as COVID-19 cases continue to rise and hospitals strain to treat patients. He says the National Guard could be called in to help hospitals deal with an overload of patients. On Sunday, area hospitals said they were using 77% of the total staffed beds and 89% of their intensive care beds. He says the region will be severely tested during the next few weeks and urged people to follow safety protocols. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast. Sunny, 50 for a high today, mostly clear with a low of 31 tonight. A 50% chance of rain tomorrow afternoon with a high of 46, and then Thursday with that chance of rain before 1, a high of 42. It's 19 now and sunny. We're getting that time of the year where the sun comes up and the temp drops just a bit. Now, there is an Arizona State Representative by the name of Mark Fincham, who yesterday, after testimony in Arizona, issued a call to withhold the state's Electoral College votes for Joe Biden because, quote, he believes there is enough significant evidence of fraud to invalidate the state's votes. And I played in the last hour some of that testimony by retired Army Colonel Phil Waldron, who is an expert on automated voting machines. And he testified about how they were monitoring and they saw that these machines were hooked to the internet during a period of time that would be significant, either votes cast or votes being counted or both. And there was information packets. It's just information flowing outside of the United States. And we've, of course, heard a lot about Frankfurt, Germany in much of this. Another witness testified to what she saw as irregularities yesterday in Arizona.
I kept looking at the screen because it seemed very odd. And in the bottom right-hand corner was a yellow banner. And I got into a position where I could see the yellow banner, which said low confidence. Then I started paying much closer attention to the signatures, thinking this didn't even make sense to me because the signature on the ballot that was being compared to other signatures didn't even resemble in any way what they were comparing it to. They were completely illegible. They were just scribbles on the ballot. And there were five screeners screening low confidence ballots for an entire afternoon that I was in there. And I asked Celia what the low confidence said, and she said just not to worry about that. That this was a new program that they were testing.
All right. And she also mentioned during her testimony what we've heard in a number of these swing states regarding truckloads of ballots showing up.
The Wednesday before the Friday that we quit voting, so 10 days before they quit tabulating, they thought they were done. And then more truckloads of ballots would come in. And I'm like, how can you not know how many ballots are still out there?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Would you repeat that?
Yeah.
They thought they were done.
They thought they were done multiple times.
There was what?
Multiple times. The people that were running the rooms thought they were done or almost done or were going to be done Wednesday morning, then Thursday morning, then Friday morning. Then it went on the whole next week. And I'm like, I asked the question, I'm like, you don't know how many ballots are still left to come in? So I don't know who does, again, process project management.
Now, that's significant. You may think, well, do they know how many ballots are out there? If you notice, when you watch on election night, what are they doing county by county, precinct by precinct? They're saying with 18% of the votes counted, this is where things are. With 52%, this is where things are. With 78%. And that's based on their knowledge of how many votes are out there. They know whether they're absentee ballots. They have all those counted. And then and you notice this when you vote. You go put it in the machine, and it goes 283 up to 284. And you know I was the 284th person to cast a ballot. And so all those numbers, and the reason for that is so you know that you count all the ballots. And so what she's testifying to is they said, oh, we're going to be all wrapped and done by Wednesday. And then all of a sudden, truckloads of ballots start showing up. She's like, how many ballots are we counting? You know, what is the number of ballots that we're expecting? And she kept getting, we don't really know. We're not really sure. How do you not know that? Unless, of course, you're counting ballots that were never actual registered ballots, that did not come in as absentee and were counted by, you know, the counties, that weren't put into machines and kept a tally. If these are above and beyond all of those, then yeah, you wouldn't know. Now, of course, arguably the correct answer is as many as we need. If in fact this was, as it appears to potentially be, just an effort to keep cramming the ballot box, as it were, for Joe Biden, then the appropriate answer would be, well, you know, how many ballots are there? Well, as many as we need to put Biden over the top. And so, anyway, that's some of the testimony that took place yesterday in Arizona. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. Here is a traffic update with Don Luzader. Pew. All right, Santa's Angels. Where are we with that, Sarah? Now, I know I went by A1 Custom Car Care in Republic yesterday, and they had I didn't count exactly. It looked like they had two or three maybe on there. Or more, I don't know.
So it looks like Anchor Tactical is out.
Okay.
Don Carriker is out.
Okay.
Crown Power has three or four, I believe.
Okay.
A1 has about five.
Okay.
And Altec has about six or seven.
Okay.
So if you are wanting to adopt one of our Santa's Angels, I highly recommend going to Altec Computers or A1 in Republic, Crown Power. Any of those three locations are going to have a kid for you.
Yeah, that would be really, really, because the gifts, we need to have them in Monday, right? Is it
correct?
Monday of next week?
Yep.
So I always feel better if they're in a few days before, because then, you know, just don't worry about it. And I would just be very grateful. And I know some of those locations you may have gone by and they were out. And so we've sort of shifted things around a little bit. Altec ran out at one point. And so any of those three specifically that she mentioned still do have kids that need to be adopted. So if you could do that, I would greatly appreciate it. There is a story about yet another Sanctuary City gone wrong. And it's gotten to the point the San Jose mayor and the police chief are pushing for sanctuary policy changes following a fatal stabbing. This is from the San Jose Spotlight. Well, the change that needs to occur is actually pretty simple. You stop being a sanctuary city. Sanctuary cities are one of these scenarios in which the media has done a very good job of either misleading people as to what it means or not educating people as to what a sanctuary city is. There are a lot of people who think a sanctuary city simply means that immigration cannot go round up innocent families who are just here for a better life. They think that's what that does. It protects those people. It's people who came here illegally. They were fleeing their countries, and they, maybe business owners at this point, maybe they're dreamers, and you've got evil ICE that wants to come in and raid their home in the middle of the night, like the Clinton administration did with Ilhan Gonzalez at gunpoint, and snatch them away and then toss them back across the border. That's not what a sanctuary city is. Sanctuary city status is not set up to protect those people. In fact, it's a danger to those people. What it does is when there is somebody who commits a crime, drunk driving, domestic abuse, rape, whatever it may be, and they get arrested, and ICE, and they also happen to be in this country illegally, ICE contacts the local municipality and says, when you are getting ready to let that person out, whether it's because they served their sentence or the judge is going to grant them bail, whatever it might be, let us know so we can have them deported, because not only are they in the country illegally, but they're also a criminal. Sanctuary cities refuse to do that and instead protect the criminal by not informing ICE when they get released back into the public. Now, what I recognize as a reality, and what is a reality, is that generally speaking, which communities do these people stay in? As we all do, we stay within communities of our culture. So that means that if these people are going to be repeat offenders, there's a very high likelihood that the people who are going to be their victims are other illegal immigrants. So in fact, sanctuary cities create an even more dangerous environment for those who are in this country illegally. Now, here's the situation in San Jose, and I love when this stuff occurs. Local leaders just can't believe it. San Jose Police Chief Eddie Garcia briefs reporters on latest details surrounding Grace Baptist Church killings. The San Jose Mayor, Sam Liccardo, and Police Chief Eddie Garcia are demanding Santa Clara County change its sanctuary city policy for the second time in little more than a year after discovering the suspect arrested for a fatal stabbing spree at Grace Baptist Church is in the country illegally. The suspect, Fernando Lopez, allegedly stabbed five people at the church and homeless shelter on November 22nd, injuring three, killing two. Four of the victims were homeless. One was a city employee and volunteer. Garcia said in the news conference, currently the San Clara County Police policy prohibits responding to immigration detainers, which allowed the suspect to be released. I received the question, what would have prevented this tragedy? I won't point to a single thing, but rather a multitude of tools and opportunities that were not utilized or failed. It's a sanctuary city status. And this isn't an isolated incident. There was a murder or two murders here in Springfield that occurred when someone, I believe it was in New Jersey, had committed a crime, was put in jail, was in the country illegally, but was of sanctuary city status, so that person got released. They ended up here in Springfield murdering someone. It was one or two people. There have been numerous instances in which individual, and so if you think, well, we don't have to worry about it because we don't have sanctuary city status, well, there were murders that took place in Springfield because of sanctuary city status, not ours. So we're not isolated from it. We're not in a vacuum. And I mean, here you just have once again a situation in which a person who was in jail, and that county has sanctuary city status, so they refuse to call immigration as requested to put a detainer on the individual, gets released out into the public, and he stabs five people, killing two. That is the compassion of sanctuary status. County Executive Jeff Smith. Now, isn't this perfect? Let's just stereotype a little based on the names. So you have the police chief, Eddie Garcia, sounds Hispanic. You've got the mayor, Sam Liccardo, sounds like that may be Hispanic. They're calling for a change. County Executive Jeff Smith, though, told San Jose Spotlight that Garcia's and Liccardo's judgment of the situation is premature and chastised them for using the tragedy to advance their political agenda of making drastic changes to the county's immigration policies. Well, it does sound like drastic changes are needed, because these are the policies that continue to result in people becoming victims. Why don't they ever say how many people have to lose their lives before we change these laws? You know, they always say that with gun laws. They're constantly using that. How many lives? How many lives? How many people must die? Well, why does that same logic not apply to situations of sanctuary cities? Jeff Smith, who, I don't know, to me sounds very white, telling the two leaders who sound Hispanic, quote, "This sort of popped up out of the blue with them, basically trying to take advantage of a horrible double murder, trying to promote their political agenda, which has been talked about numerous times. I think it's extremely unprofessional. Obviously, with a murder like this, there are many factors that contributed to it. It's not just the immigration status. It's not just methamphetamine use. It's not just homelessness." It is remarkable to me that you have people that openly take a stance of protecting, again, this isn't about protecting illegal aliens. This is about protecting criminals, specifically within the illegal immigration realm. Now, I know a lot of you are saying, oh, you are a criminal if you come here illegally. But I'm talking about those who, you know, once they're here illegally, commit other crimes like domestic abuse, drunk driving. It's just, to me, beyond any sort of logic or any sort of humanity to prioritize violent criminals over individual human beings in the country, legally or otherwise. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. It is, I hate to use the word interesting, but there is a level of that in some of these people that are being picked to be part of a Biden presidency. And I mean, one of these individuals, for example, is the he selected her to the Office of Management and Budget. Bobby, what's your and virtually everyone acknowledges she's a nut job. Like, total, of all of the people that you would choose, why this person? Her name is Neera Tanden, and she's like conspiracy theory into conspiracy theory. She's long falsely claimed, without evidence, that Russia hacked into voting machines and, you know, that they stole the election. She didn't buy fully. She not only bought fully into all the Russian collusion stuff that turned out not to be true, but she was enhancing it with these theories about how they actually hacked into machines and so forth. But one of the other things that she did, according to the New York Times, they wrote a story on this last year, that when she was working for Hillary Clinton on her campaign, and there was an interview that she was that Hillary was doing with the chief editor of Think Progress, and she was upset at some of the questioning. She clocked the guy, slugged him. Now, she claims, I didn't hit him, I just pushed him really hard in the chest. But either which way, like, that's your defense? Well, I didn't assault him the way that everyone claims I assaulted him. And this is somebody that Biden thinks is one of the best in the country for his cabinet of unity? Someone who assaults reporters? That's nice. Very classy. Here's Don Luzader. He's got a traffic update. All right. Bobby, hold on. We'll get to you here in just a quick second. First, Don Luzader has our latest news update.
And good morning. Cox Health President and CEO Steve Edwards says the latest death toll from COVID-19 is pretty astounding. 30 people have died over the past 8 days in Cox hospitals. And Steve Edwards anticipates the number of deaths from the pandemic could double by the end of January. 10 people died on Missouri roadways over the holiday weekend. That's down from 11 deaths last year. The Highway Patrol says there were no drownings or boating fatalities. And after two staff members tested positive for COVID-19, the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City will have to close for 10 days. The museum president says officials decided to close the museum starting Sunday as a precautionary measure to protect staff and visitors. The museum plans to reopen December 8th. And that's the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast, sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvement. Sunny, 50 for a high today, mostly clear tonight with a low of 31. 50% chance for rain after 1 tomorrow with a high of 46. And Thursday, a 50% chance of rain before 1 with a high of 42. It's 22 and sunny. All right, so the Queen City Motors talk and text line, 447-KSGF. And let's go to Bobby. Bobby, welcome to the show.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I have a question for you that I've wondered. I know they passed laws that... You can't sue individual politicians and everything, but how come in these sanctuary cities when somebody gets killed like that, why don't they sue the city? Why don't they sue the county? And then why don't they put another one against the state, like California, the whole state pretty much that way? Enough people was to do that, they win enough money, maybe they would change.
Yeah, so there have been attempts to do this. Now, one of the most high profile, and the reason for those of you who missed that we're talking about this is because of there's another murder that took place in San Jose, and it was an individual who was in the country illegally, committed a crime, but because it's a sanctuary city, they released him, and then he stabbed five people, killing two. And so the mayor and the police chief of San Jose are saying this: it's a county sanctuary deal that it needs to change. And but the county's pushing back and saying no. And so the question, and that's one that so many people ask: why can they not sue when something like this happens? You have the, you know, laws that are deliberately created to protect criminals, many of which are violent criminals, protected and dropped back out into the community where they commit some sort of act of violence, oftentimes murdering. And one of the more high profile cases that occurred several years ago that brought a lot of attention to sanctuary cities was Katie Steinle, I think, is in this was a case where an illegal shot her, and he was, you know, either let off or got a slap on the wrist. This was in San Francisco, and he shot her. He claimed that, oh, he just found a gun and picked it up and it accidentally went off. Now, he was one that during interrogation or questioning, interrogation, whichever, and he was asked, how did you end up in San Francisco? And he said, because it's a sanctuary city. I mean, told them that. And her family filed lawsuits. They were dismissed. And largely into the point that Bobby was making there, that's because lawmakers are protected. You know, if they create some law and something bad happens to somebody because of it, they're protected. And I, you know, to a degree, you can understand why. Let's say, for example, in Missouri, it has recently become legal for motorcyclists to not wear a helmet under certain conditions. Well, if somebody isn't wearing a helmet and they're in a motorcycle accident and they get killed, their family could sue the lawmakers who voted for it. And so it's these protections are put there for reasonable reasons. But when you get to the point that you are literally creating environments that are a draw for oftentimes violent criminals, And you are helping them escape federal immigration authorities, you're in a new realm here, and that's what's been happening. Now, maybe the states could, you know, depending on the state, do something about that. I just don't know the answer. So much of this is regional. You know, you have a county here, a county there, and so forth, and And like this case here, you have the city of San Jose in the county that's saying you have to change this. And they're like, no, we're not going to. You just are trying to use this for political purposes. And so it seems so counterproductive. You and I, as normal people, think if there were a policy that was clearly leading to violent criminals being released into the community, and then you had people dying from it, you're a normal person. You think we'd change that right away. But that's not how everyone thinks, unfortunately. Bobby, thanks for the call. I know that's probably not the answer that I mean, you'd like to have an answer that makes sense, right? That's what you're looking for. The problem is some of these people that make these decisions, they don't make any sense. Or if you try and make sense of it, we don't want to believe where the logic leads us. We don't want to believe that for political purposes, you would have people in positions of power creating laws that knowingly result in innocent people being killed. But I got to tell you, it happens. I mean, you know, talk to anybody that works in a nursing home up in New York, for example. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. Once again, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch displays their ignorance as to how our elections work, and they've got this editorial. Blunt's refusal to say three words, President-elect Biden, is a slap at 80 million voters. Well, here's the fact of the matter. Just because you call someone president-elect does not mean that they are. Just because you want to... And I'm not saying that because, well, the election was stolen. A person becomes president-elect. They are president-elect in between the period of time in which the electors go to Washington, D.C. and cast all their votes and inauguration. That is the period of time. It isn't, you know, when the news outlets call the person as the president-elect. It isn't when you have certification of the votes in a state. In December is when each state sends its electors to Washington, D.C. to cast their votes. Whomever it is when those votes is the president-elect until inauguration when they're sworn in and becomes president. So it's not a slap in the face for Roy Blunt to not call Joe Biden something that he isn't. Now, if the St. Louis Post-Dispatch doesn't like the way that the Constitution is, doesn't like the way that we elect the president, that's perfectly fine. If you think that media outlets should be the ones that call the election officially and makes a person president-elect, okay, write an editorial about that. But to claim that Roy Blunt is slapping 80 million voters in the face because he won't call Joe Biden something that he won't, if he even becomes it, officially become until mid-December, a couple of weeks from now, is completely ignorant. I mean, it is just amazing to me these people who get put in positions to dispense information when they clearly don't even know what they're talking about. They write, Joe Biden is America's president-elect. No, he is not. He's not, just like he's not president. This is like saying, well, he should automatically become president. Well, but the president gets sworn in on an official day. Well, but most people voted for him, so he should just be president right now. That's not how it works. You know what's amazing to me is an outlet like that, and I, and of course the Kansas City Star isn't much better when it comes to their editorial board. There's not a single educated person amongst them that knows this stuff. Not a single person that raises their hand and says, actually... You know, Candace Owen, in fact, PolitiFact recently had to back down Candace Owen, conservative commentator. She had either tweeted out or Facebook something regarding this very issue and how Biden is not the president-elect. That's just a fact. I think she made a video referencing that. And she got fact-checked as false because Joe Biden got the most votes. Well, she pushed back, and finally PolitiFact had to admit that they were wrong. and that she was right. Because president-elect is not a designation that is given to an individual prior to the electors casting their votes in Washington. I mean, it is exhausting living in a country where so many completely ignorant or dishonest people are, but these are editors of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I mean, what do you have to do in order to get a job at a place like this? Put your pants on? I mean, the standards seem to be so incredibly low and embarrassing. They ought to be embarrassed. This is a simple matter of fact. It's not a matter of opinion. It has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that votes are being challenged or that there are lawsuits. All of that is irrelevant to whether or not a person is president-elect. All right. Black Lives Matter activists are protesting outside the home of Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti because they're opposing his potential nomination to a Joe Biden cabinet position. Now, they don't like him because they, you know, wanted him to defund police and he wouldn't do it and so forth. And so in the classy way of Black Lives Matter, they've been standing outside his home screaming F Garcetti. That's a very articulate argument that they're putting forth. And they have said that they will gather every single day at 9 a.m. Quote, we're telling Joe Biden not to appoint it's Mayor OFLA to his cabinet. And his last name's Garcetti, and his first name's Eric. I don't know what that means, but nonetheless, we won't allow his failed policies to become a part of the national agenda. This is what they put on their Facebook page. He's reportedly been under consideration for Secretary of Transportation of Housing and Urban Development. He says he's too busy saving lives when it comes to COVID to worry about that. All right. Now, part of this relationship between Black Lives Matter and Democrats, Biden, Harris, and all these, is going to be interesting to see how it plays out if Biden becomes president. The reason I say this is because I remember, though they weren't violent like this, there was an organization called Code Pink during the Bush years. And Code Pink were anti-war activists, which where they were supporting Trump, I don't know. They were anti-war activists. And they were headed up by Cindy Sheehan, whose son had died. I believe it was Iraq. Afghanistan or Iraq, but I believe it was in Iraq. And Bush had met with her, and she had even talked about what a nice meeting it was. But something happened over time, and then she became angry and demanded to meet with him again, and he wasn't going to do it. You know, he met with her once, wasn't going to do it. So the media portrayed her as you know, this poor mother that Bush refused to meet with, which wasn't true because he had met with her. And she would camp out outside his ranch in Crawford, Texas, and the media was there, and oh, Cindy Sheehan was just this incredible, incredible activist. And Code Pink, they were just doing these incredible things until Obama became president. And there was a transition. Now, Code Pink still held true to their beliefs. In fact, they would oftentimes protest outside Nancy Pelosi's office as Speaker of the House. But all of a sudden, Democrats had no use for them, which meant the media stopped covering them and they just went away. Now, Black Lives Matter is much more top-down, and, of course, the Code Pink was never violent. They didn't cause billions of dollars worth of damage like Black Lives Matter has, and there's a lot of big money behind Black Lives Matter. So, it would be much more difficult for them just to go away, which is going to make it difficult for Democrats who just use them like they used Code Pink in order to attack their political opponent. But all that being said, watching this relationship play out with Democrats, you know, being in charge and Black Lives Matter believing that they're responsible for it, All that, I think, will be interesting to watch. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. All right. Tom Martz is texting saying that the electors that they have designated place to cast their vote in their respective state, and that could very well be. But they ultimately, the point is the same, and that is a person does not become president-elect until those electors cast those votes. And so the St. Louis Board Dispatch shaming Blunt for not acknowledging Biden as president-elect when he's not actually president-elect. It's just, you know, crazy. Frustrating. I mean, you would, you know, if a high school or junior high student was writing a report on what makes a president-elect, the editorial board of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch would fail. Trump is making one last bid for historic Israel-Middle East peace deals. Now, I mean, Trump is a guy that does not stop. And it really is amazing to me everything that he can cram into place. I mean, all of the everything that's going on, and at the same time, he's still making a push for further peace in the Middle East. So Kushner is going to head off this week, and they want to try and advance the peace in the Middle East, I believe, far enough that momentum will overtake it. And so even with Biden in there coddling the Palestinians and coddling the Iranians, that the rest of the Middle East will see it to their benefit to continue with that forward momentum. That's what I believe is going on here. The administration, of course, achieving several monumental diplomatic breakthroughs with Israel in the region. Kushner's Middle East visit this week suggests that the Trump administration is working overtime to finish strong on these issues. Kushner is going to fly to Saudi Arabia and Qatar this week. Now, Saudi Arabia, we mentioned, Benjamin Netanyahu made a historic visit, flew to Saudi Arabia. Absolutely unthinkable historic. That in and of itself, completely historic. Of course, it gets dismissed as no big deal because that would simply be a further indication as to the Trump success of creating peace in the Middle East. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that according to U.S. and Gulf officials, Kushner will focus on resolving the three-year-old rift between Qatar and the Gulf neighbors, including Riyadh. Among others, the president's son-in-law will meet with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, in whom Kushner has a close personal relationship. The Kushner-MBS relationship, based on a shared desire to counter Iran and to tighten relations between Israel and the Arab world, helped reshape the Middle East, allowing Trump to broker deals connecting Israel with the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Sudan. It is very, very clear that Trump, obviously, I've talked about this, his approach is much different. The approach of past presidents, specifically the most recent administration, that being the Obama-Biden administration, they put on all their focus on coddling the Palestinians and the Iranians. These are the two biggest exporters of terrorism. Their plan, work with the bad guys, give the bad guys everything they want in exchange for a promise they'll start being good guys. The Trump approach was the opposite. The Trump approach is, you know, these other countries, it's all in the Middle East, but I can reason with them. People who want all Jews and Americans dead probably can't reason with them. But some of these other countries, they don't ultimately want that. It's just, you know, Iran is in their backyard. The Palestinians are in their backyard. They can cause them trouble, so they don't want to be a problem. You know, so they just kind of sit back and they're like, hey, what do you expect us to do? But Trump thought, you know what? No, I'm going to hit these guys. And he did, and it was working. The past approach of trying to win over the terrorist is a failed approach. The Trump approach of trying to win over the nations that aren't the lead terrorist in the world is working. But because I know how Washington works and how the elites work, they will not only go back to the old way of doing things and dismissing those who have come on board and instead coddling up the terrorists, they'll probably double down on it. Because they have to, because that gives them an emotional satisfaction that Trump was wrong and his approach won't work. And it is such an awful shame. Because what we're going to see here is people putting their own egos ahead of peace in the Middle East. That they will put their hatred for Trump above peace in the Middle East. And instead of acknowledging that his way worked, you know, if Biden really were interested in unity and really were interested in peace in the Middle East, he'd have Trump on as a special envoy to the Middle East because what he's doing is working. But we know that's not going to happen. Glenn Beck's coming up next. I will talk to you tomorrow. I'm Nick Reed, Springfield's Talk 104.1.